Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 86 for May 26, 2010. What the heck is that? All right, it's time for We Have Communicators. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, the iPad, and everything in between. With me here is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Busy as all heck, but good.
Wonderful. It's good to be busy.
Yeah.
Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Oh, hey. How's it going?
Good.
And you know what? I already knew that because yeah. Adam asked you.
Well, I think I said great, and then...
Oh, and now you're just doing good.
Well, I mean, you started talking, so...
Yeah.
That's mean. Oh, it's fantastic to have you both here. We're going to be talking about some iPhone stuff. We actually don't have a whole lot to talk about this week, so feel free to tune out right now if you want. But if you're willing to... Uh-oh.
Whoa.
Oh, holy crap. I'm sorry. I couldn't get to the mute in time.
And see, if you had tuned out, you wouldn't have witnessed that. So we'll have more little Easter eggs and gems like that during the show to keep everyone entertained.
Is that an ocelopso you got?
What?
I'm wondering what kind of dog that was, Jeff.
That was me.
Yeah, that was Jeff.
No, I know. I'm joking.
Oh, okay.
But I may have actually expelled a chihuahua when I did this.
That's probably true. Okay, so getting right down to it. Last week I talked about how we are now allowing everybody to call in with feedback. So you can leave audio comments and we'll play those when you have something to say. And that
hey,
email.
What's the phone number?
Well, first of all, the email address. If you want to email in an audio comment, there's a high likelihood that I will play your audio comment as long as it's relevant. Feedback@wehavecommunicators.com is the email address that you can send that. And you can also email just plain old text, but there's a low likelihood that I'm going to read that. But if you don't want an email... an audio comment. You want to call it in. We have a phone number now. It's 202-642-6667. So it's 202-64-COMS. I think that's why I set it up. COMS? I don't know why I did that. It doesn't make any sense. It's 202-642-6667. And you can call in with your audio comments to that number, and we will play them on the podcast.
Cool. Did we get any this time?
No, we didn't, because we didn't ask any questions. I mean, I called. I called myself to make sure it worked. I could play that, but it's not really interesting. So, anyway.
I'm calling it right now.
Oh, yeah? Well, it's not going to ring. Are you just going to leave
a
message?
I know. It doesn't matter.
It's actually, the thing about Google Voice is you have to hook it up to a phone number. You cannot not have a phone number hooked up to it, and I already have my cell phone number hooked up to my business line, so I had to hook up the podcast line to my mom's house phone. So if
your mom picks up,
yeah, just say hey, just be nice. You know, it's cool. Anyway,
football, orange, shoe, fish, bye.
And we're gonna see how good the the transcription is on that.
I can't wait to hear how that one turns out.
Okay. All right. Getting into it. Video conferencing screenshot of the debugging software. So let me just rewind here. Boy Genius Reports has gotten some screenshots from someone who works at Apple and is working on, I don't know, the software, the hardware. And they sent in a screenshot of the video call debugging option in the settings. And it really doesn't do much other than confirm that we're probably going to see, in all likelihood, a video conferencing on the next iPhone, as we've been indicated by the screenshots. Or not the screenshots,
but
by the photos. Okay, so you're not thinking we're going to see video calls on this next phone?
I'm really having a hard time accepting the fact that Apple, if they didn't put the features into the iPad, why would they put it into the iPhone, which is an even wobblier platform if you're trying to hold it up and talk to someone? And how hobbled a feature would that be if you could do video conferencing, but you can only do it over Wi-Fi? Because you know AT&T would just flip if Apple tried to start pushing video conferencing over 3G. I just don't see it happening.
Can I just piss everybody off and say that either way, video conferencing on a cell phone, on a mobile device is stupid. And if you use it,
you are
you're
right.
Stupid.
Well, there you have it.
If I see you video conferencing at the coffee shop on your cell phone talking loudly, which is already annoying if you're doing it in your Bluetooth, but if I see you video conferencing, I'm going to come over and punch you in the face.
What if I video conference you when you get your new phone?
No, I'm not really that upset about it. But I'm joking, but to some degree, think about it. Think about how annoying it's going to be. It's already annoying when people are talking really loud on their cell phone, right? When you're in a public space. Now they're going to be video chatting. Please. And
it just,
I just think
makes sense.
Yeah, as a feature, you know, people are going to turn it on, they're going to use it one time, realize how dumb it is, and then never use it again. So it's almost a waste of space and technology in the phone, if you ask me. Because it's going to be so underutilized. And I know I'm going to get emails from geeks who are like, I'm going to use it all the time. It's going to be so great. I use video conferencing all the time. If you lumped everybody that has a smartphone, mobile phone together and asked everybody, if we could do a survey of everybody, I would be shocked if it's more than 5% of people who will ever use a video chat feature on a mobile device.
I can't imagine it would be even that high.
You know, okay. And then some people go, well, Apple always pioneers this stuff and they're going to push it forward and they're going to make it great and everybody's going to use it. I still even argue on the desktop, even with Skype, even with iChat, and I know there are tons of people who use it all the time. I will get emails from people who say, I use it every day. Every day I use it. I use it for my business. I use it. But if I added all those people up together and then compared them to all the people who I've asked the same question and they say, I've never used that feature, it's a 95 to 5% ratio. It really is. Just sorry. And I run in geek circles. A lot of my friends are technology people. And a lot of these people, it's not about the technology. It's just they don't want to see people when they're talking to them on the phone. They just want to talk to them on the phone. And some of them go even further and say, I don't even want to talk to them. I just want to email and text. So I just don't get the feature. And Apple has always been a company, as far as I know, where it's about the functionality more than just sticking a feature in, because you can stick in a feature.
There you go. So. I'm behind you 100% on that. The whole video chat thing makes no sense. And even with these debugging screenshots, I'm still not buying that it's going to be there. And with all the photos that have been just pouring out into the internet of next generation iPhones with front facing cameras, I'm still not buying that the camera's going to be there.
Okay. So that's the next thing on our list to talk about is the fact that we're seeing even more of these photos of the front panels of the iPhone, as well as fully assembled black ones, several white partial assemblies of these next generation iPhones. And they all have
a dot,
a hole for the camera. And
for some other type of sensor.
Yeah, I don't think with the number we've seen, the number of these phones and front cases, that this is just kind of a test thing. And I also think that this is probably very, very close. You know, in the past, I've thought, okay, this can't be the final design of the iPhone. And I think that it's possible we'll see some tweaks, but I just, with the amount of different sources showing the same or very, very similar phone, I don't think we're going to see something that's much different at WWDC. I think this is pretty much it.
Yeah. I'm kind of buying this design. The white, I'm not 100% convinced.
Sure, and we've only seen a few of those.
I know we've seen a couple of them, but I'm just wondering if it's, I don't know. It probably will be there. I guess the question I have about this photo is what's throwing me off, and I want to know if either of you noticed this, but this latest photo that popped up, if you look at the white one, and maybe this is because they're saying it's only partially assembled, is the white plate just kind of set on top of the phone? Because I look at the home button, and it looks like the home button's way too recessed. So it must just be, is it just sitting on top of the frame, kind of not pushed it down yet?
It looks like it's just laying down on there.
Okay.
Or like maybe the right side is pushed down a little bit, but the left side isn't. So most of it's sitting up too high.
Yeah, that's a partially assembled.
Yeah, when I saw this first photo, I thought, well, maybe somebody just, you know, like cut out a thing and set it on top and then took the picture and tried to make it look like a white faceplate. But then I thought, well, maybe it just, that's the partially assembled. They haven't sort of locked it down. And the only other thing on that one too is it still has that seam in the side. And I'm just not buying that seam is going to be in a final production model, because it just looks, unless there's a function for that seam.
It doesn't seem like there really is a function for that, because every time we've seen it disassembled, I'm almost positive that that's a solid piece, right? And that's just a fake seam. It's not even a functional seam to take it apart.
Okay, so what I'm thinking is that if this is very close to what the final design will be, instead of going to the expense of milling that metal piece that goes around the sides as a single unit, what you do is you take a bunch of strips and you machine them into shape.
I would agree with you with any other company, right? But Apple doesn't have seams. They barely have buttons.
But if it's just for testing purposes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. The final version, assuming this is pretty much what it's going to look like, that will be a solid piece that has no seams.
Yeah, because you can't tell me Apple hasn't figured out how to mill something out of a solid piece of metal and do it in mass and do it in a way that, you know, is not overly expensive.
Sure, that's exactly what they're doing.
Exactly.
That's what I mean. Yeah. They've had some experience with that over the last couple of years.
Now, I'm looking back at the Gizmodo disassembly from a little while ago, and from what it looks like, that center aluminum piece does not come apart at those seams. It's just an aesthetic fake seam.
And yeah, I wouldn't even call it aesthetic. I would call it a side effect of taking a single piece of metal, bending it into shape, and then having some little piece that stamps it together. And so you end up with a seam.
Yeah. So why on the black one in this picture is that on the other side of the white one? Is that a feature?
Huh. I hadn't noticed that.
What was that?
If you look, they have these latest pictures from mac.com.hk or applepro.com, the ones that are up on Mac mm-hmm. Rumors.
Yeah.
If you look at the second image, the top-down image, it looks like that seam is on the black one on the right side and on the white one on the left side.
I think it's just on both sides.
Is it? Oh, you
I don't think it is. I think it's only on one side.
Anyway, but how could these be pre-production models if there's so many of these showing up?
I just can't imagine
that there's that many pre-production. So then I'm like, well, then that seam has got to be in there if these are production models. And then what is that seam for? Is it a design element? Is there some sort of function, like,
you know, I feel like if there's
the
no function for
clickable
it.
Or,
you know,
Apple wouldn't just have it in there, a seam in there for no reason. It just doesn't seem to add to the design. It doesn't make it cooler, I don't think.
No. And the fact that there's that strange spot right above the earpiece on the white phone that we can actually see. Yeah, we're probably going to, that's where the sensors are, I'm guessing, on both phones, but on the black one, you can't see it. And of course on the phones that are out now, those sensors are there and they're disguised by, translucent, you know, black material that you can hardly see through. I'm guessing that at the very least, this, white front is still more pre-production than the black front is. And that would make sense because, you know, why would they be producing a lot of the white versions when the black is just kind of the accepted version that they do. And so if they're going to be giving out test models, they'll probably just produce more black ones and not so many white ones. The reason I bring that up is mostly because I think the white looks terrible.
It does. Now, I want to point out something. Just based on what it looks like the size of that iPhone is, if you look at the size of the sensors that are in the current iPhone model, that little circle looks just about the same size as one of the sensors, or as all the sensors that are currently there.
I think there are several sensors, and it's gotten longer.
Well, if you look if you hold a light up to the face of your iPhone, and you look to the left of the little speaker slot, there's three sensors.
Right.
It's like two stacked up and one to the side. And all three of those sensors are the same size, and they look to me to be the same size as that opening, the circle opening, on the new prototype.
Yeah, but why would that be exposed and open as opposed to the other two?
Maybe Apple has changed the sensor in some way so that it can do more, or that it's more sensitive. And so they had to open up the space more. Or maybe it's because it's a pre-production model and they're testing different things.
Well, there's definitely a camera on the front of the Gizmodo phone.
Yeah, well, there's also an opening just the right size for a MacBook Pro EyeSight camera in the iPad.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, oh, boy.
Okay, next one, Michael. Don't worry. I can sit you down all day.
To be honest, I'm not with Jeff on the video camera. I'm somewhat frightened that the video camera is going to be there.
I think it's going to be there, too.
I'm going to be really annoyed by it. But, you know, I'll hold back because maybe Apple has some magical excuse that I'm going to, or software thing that makes it make sense to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm
thinking.
Totally
wrong. But right now, I just can't think of the application of, you know, okay, I'm a business traveler and I'm doing Skype in my hotel room. Okay, maybe there's an application there. But I just don't see that being a mass appeal feature. And, you know, the camera sensors cost. The building the software to support it costs. And to spend all that time and effort for a small number of people, I just don't... Apple doesn't play the phone feature game.
Okay, now, considering the fact that I'm pretty sure... two out of three of us are pretty sure that we're going to see a front-facing video camera on this phone. Apple is... Would you agree that they would support it with some kind of software that allows you to do the video chatting feature?
Oh, yeah.
So I think we're going to see something like iChat on the iPhone.
Okay, so supporting video chat on the iPhone, to me, makes sense only if you can do it over 3G as well as Wi-Fi. Otherwise, it's just a hobbled feature, and everyone's going to complain about how they can't use it when they're out and away from Starbucks or home. So if I can think about how annoying that would be right now, I can only imagine that there's a room full of Apple engineers that have already said, this is going to piss people off. And Steve Jobs has thought the same thing, too.
Well, there are a lot of things about the iPhone that piss me off already. So I don't think that Apple's too concerned about the Wi-Fi versus 3G thing. And if you know, consider the iPad with 3G, they're allowing video streaming over that. You know, let's just say we have a lower quality version of video chat over 3G.
I don't know. Video chat makes more sense in the iPad than in the iPhone. I still maintain that the video chat feature might, from Apple's point of view, being supported by Apple in software, might more likely show up first as a piece of the game kit or the game engine.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Apple's going to do something like put a camera on the front of the phone without having some software besides like a stupid photo booth. To do something with. And we've seen software calls in the various seeds of the SDK talking about video chat and an iChat agent and stuff like that. I'm just really hoping that we will see a good chat client on the iPhone, because every single chat client, with maybe the exception of Meebo, is just awful.
You know, I kind of think that Apple puts a lot of those hooks in place early on when they're developing the operating system and when they're developing these prototypes, and very often decides this isn't the version we're actually going to release that in. But rather than rip all that code out, they just kind of they kind of leave it in place.
That is possible.
Well, and, that's a good point.
We've also seen that with the iPod Touch, the third generation iPod Touch, there were absolutely versions of the iPod Touch that had a camera in there.
Right, those ended up on eBay, and again recently.
Yeah.
Now, as far as leaving hooks in, as I recall, there was talk about the iChat hooks in iPhone OS 3 before it was released too.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that people are still finding those things in the OS shouldn't be a surprise.
Well, it could be that they've been working on developing the video chat feature since then, and that they're just about ready to release it.
Again, I think they need. I think what Apple typically waits on is they play around with these things and they try these things,
right.
And then what they're waiting on is what is the real world application? What is the justification for this feature in this software? And how are we going to make it compelling so that people actually use it?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Apple
on that.
Does not like to put in features that are just going to go unused. I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to see something that really makes sense to have video, the video chat.
Maybe it's for augmented reality stuff.
Sure.
I could see that. And how it would be used in a way that's actually cool and compelling, I don't know. But that's Apple's job. They do cool and compelling. I just come up with weird ideas.
Mm-hmm. And draw them, and so I can post them with the show notes.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's a multimedia podcast.
Yeah. Also, side note, if you haven't seen him yet, Jeff's been for the last few weeks drawing various things with his iPad and submitting them to me. Like, he's drawing them right now or during the show, and then he emails them to me after, and they're included in the show notes. So that's another little bonus.
I haven't drawn one yet today.
Well, you have to now.
Now I'm committed. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Let's see, what else do we have here? Steve Jobs says we won't be disappointed by WWDC.
As if he'd say anything else.
No, this is going to be a real letdown. You don't want to show up to this one. Don't even bother.
I'm considering showing up late myself. Yeah, I could totally see Steve Jobs saying, yeah, this one's going to be lame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the readers over at MacRumors sent Steve Jobs a fairly incoherent email. I should really read it. Are Google taking the piss? I hope you have some good WWDC announcements to blow them out the water. F the Google Android team, sent from my iPhone. I don't
That's
know.
Vogue on poetry.
I don't. It's funny that Steve Jobs replied to that email.
Reply to that, yeah,
yeah, yeah. But he said you won't be disappointed at the end.
Well, it's his new hobby. You know, he's getting older. He needs something to do.
Sure. Yeah, he's hanging out,
responding to random emails. Maybe become his new.
Maybe his kids have gone off to college and he doesn't have anything else to do when he's at home. I mean, it's a cool thing that he's doing. It's just I was more entertained by the initial email than his reply. But, yeah.
What that says to me, that email, is the theory that if you put monkeys in front of typewriters long enough, eventually they'll produce Shakespeare sonnets. I think this is proof that the monkeys are starting to work towards that.
Possibly, yeah.
And out there is some reader or a listener thinking, I wrote that. You're an ass. And so I apologize to you up front.
I'm just going to say learn English.
Beyond iPhone, the fourth generation iPhone, do we think there's going to be anything else really?
I am hoping and praying that we will see a new version of iTunes that is written in Cocoa. And that, that's the thing that I've been talking about forever, but iTunes is at version 9, and did we see a new version of iTunes last year? Was it a significant upgrade at WWDC? I feel like we did see an upgrade to iTunes.
I think they said the new, I can't remember, but there was an update that had to do with iPhone OS 3 compatibility.
Well, sure. We're going to see compatibility with the new iPhone OS, but I feel like...
Was it 9.1? Was it just 9.0 to 9.1? I don't remember how long we've been living with 9.
WWDC iTunes. That's the Google I'm... Yeah. But, I mean, we just... I don't understand how Apple... They must not be using the same version of iTunes that I get to use, because the one that I use doesn't work. Is that your guys' experience, that just iTunes is a piece?
You know, iTunes works okay for me, but I do very specific things with it. And that's it. So I let Genius Playlist do its thing. And I periodically download music or rip a CD. And then everything else happens on one of my iPods or my iPad.
You know, I think that we saw one of the significant updates for iTunes at one of the September announcements.
The biggest problem I have with iTunes these days is with podcasts. And specifically, my specific annoyance, and this is a bug that's been there for forever, is I manage all my podcasts through iTunes, so I delete episodes that I've listened to. So I'll go through the podcast section and a bunch of old episodes I've already listened to, I'll delete, and you know, it pops up that message says, do you want to move these to the trash or delete them, you know, from your hard drive? I say yes, and off I go. Well, invariably 6 months down the line, I go into my iTunes folder. I actually, in the Finder, go to the folder location where all the podcasts are, and there's a bunch of files there from
podcasts I have noticed that
aren't that. Listed in iTunes anymore, you know, like gigs and gigs worth.
Sure. there's a new option to clean up your iTunes though, right?
Yeah, but I don't think it removes that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Another thing that, you know, we may see the streaming iTunes at WWDC. We may see, you know, with the acquisition of Lala and the fact that it's being shut down, I think we may see a streaming version of iTunes.
That's possible. I mean, they have Lala, and they are shutting down the service. So they obviously have some other plan, at least for the people that have worked at Lala. And I can't imagine that it has something to do or that it's their plans are to pull these people outside of the area of expertise they already have,
sure,
which is doing essentially the cloud music thing.
Well, it's so interesting to think that if Apple wasn't planning on doing something with that technology fairly soon, it doesn't make sense that they would shut the system down at this point. Why wouldn't they just let it keep going for a little while longer until they actually do plan to do something with it? And yeah, they do have to pay for server costs and stuff like that. But
yeah,
why upset all those
subscribers
customers?
Are doing that? So okay, so the reason to shut it down and not have anything happen with or at least publicly happen for a while that I can see would be that they want to take all of the man hours that are going into supporting and maintaining Lala and put that into developing whatever it is Apple wants to do. And so if they shut that down now, then it puts us in a position where we can see something potentially sooner as opposed to later out of whatever it is they're working on.
Sure. Adam's back.
Yay.
We missed you while you were gone.
Yeah, Adam dropped
that
out of the call.
That was very weird.
did your computer shut off or just Skype?
Oh. No, it's just Skype.
Yeah, Skype's good. We were just talking about why Apple might want to shut down Lala if they had no intention of starting up their own service fairly soon. And
well,
Jeff,
they shut it down already, right?
No, they're planning to shut it down at the end of the month. But my thought is if they decided to shut it down at this point, why wouldn't they release something fairly soon after that? Why would they shut it down if they're not going to do anything with it.
There was some speculation that it was just a strategic acquisition for some technologies and employees that would just be rolled into iTunes. And I mean, we're pretty certain they've already used one component of it to enable the web previews, right?
I don't think
so. Oh, right. I forgot about that.
You think the web previews are...
Because you can preview, you can get the 30-second audio previews now in the browser.
But everything in Lala's service is based on Flash playback.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know what Lala was working on behind the scenes, though. They could have already had a plan to phase out the Flash requirement for that.
Sure.
I don't know. It was odd. The timing was odd.
Yeah.
If not, because they acquired Lala, and then like a few months later, they released that feature.
So iPhone 3G supplies are beginning to run dry ahead of WWDC on the 7th of next month. It seems like you can't get the 3G from Apple's website or most AT&T stores and several Apple stores as well. And stores actually around the country are running out of the 3G stock, the $100 version of the iPhone.
Yeah, which makes sense, assuming that Apple is getting ready to introduce a new iPhone model.
Sure.
And then they take one of the current 3GS models and make that the low-cost entry-level iPhone.
Yep. And Walmart is also reportedly cutting the price of the iPhone 3GS. Actually, today.
I haven't checked back on that. I checked this morning.
Oh, good. So
the white and black 16-gig iPhone 3GS costs $97.
That's a deal. Yeah. Run out to the Walmart.
Yeah, that's assuming that you're okay not upgrading to whatever new iPhone is coming out for a couple years, because you have to do the 2-year contract when you buy it.
Yep, that's still a contracted phone, still subsidized. The international iPad launches are happening on Friday, right?
Yes, that's right.
They've already started shipping.
Have some customers already gotten them, or are they just... in transit?
They got the shipping in transit notice. Yeah,
probably doing the same deal where some of those people who seem like they're going to get it early are getting Apple's calling the UPS or what have you, saying, hey, don't deliver it until this time, which is interesting that they have any sort of pull with with UPS and FedEx on that front. But yeah, Friday's the day for international iPad sales. It's the 3G version and the Wi-Fi version.
You want to know the funny thing?
What's the funny thing?
Every Mac fan that I know that lives internationally already has one.
Yeah, they already have them. Yeah, and the app stores overseas are already turned on, I think, as we talked about last week.
It was like last week, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The app stores and the iBook stores are... I think that the iBook stores, they weren't as populated as the iBook store is here, maybe because they were, still getting it set up.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And probably still working out deals with publishers.
Right, exactly. Android 2.2. Did we talk about this at all? There was the Google I/O last week, and they talked about the newest version of Android, codenamed Froyo. It's version 2.2, and one of the big features of that operating system is that the browser has Flash compatibility, and that it is also super fast. with the testing that has been done on that new operating system, if you do have Flash enabled, it's slower, much slower than say the iPhone's browser, and it also in many cases takes up a lot more RAM, which kind of talks to the point that Flash sucks and we don't want it on our phones. However, if you do it disable Flash on the Android's browser, then it's much faster than even the 3GS in some cases.
Okay, and to be fair on this though, it seems like it's only slower if you're loading a site that has Flash on it.
Right, that is true, yeah.
And a developer friend I was talking to about this today also pointed out the fact that it was not clear, and I watched that video too, it was not clear that is it because it has to just download the Flash files, and the designers of certain websites, those Flash files can be fairly large. You know, is it downloading a 90K banner ad that, you know, so is it the download time, or is it actually really slowing down the render, or because the whole page loads and then the Flash comes in later. So is it just downloading the Flash? Is it a network problem? So it's kind of hard to tell.
Sure.
Where is the slowdown? Is it because the Flash isn't playing at that point, at least not in the videos that I saw.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if, you know, two pages with the same, relatively the same size, you know, one page having something else besides Flash, maybe a large image loading, and then the other with Flash, and seeing which one is which faster.
You know what, though? I do somewhat take it back, because now I remember also in that video, I think he plays some of the Flash, or even just has a page with a Flash banner loaded at the top, and he tries to do scrolling, and I think it totally chunks.
It crashed and died.
Yeah.
That's right. So that
is Flash degrading the performance on the page, or the performance of the device, actually. And which is funny,
I consider crashing the device degrading performance.
And the 10.1 is the one that they've optimized, and it's running on a Snapdragon, right? So it has every advantage. So it's hardware accelerated Flash, mobile Flash, running on a 1 gigahertz device with what should be adequate RAM. Doesn't the Nexus One has 512, which is double what the iPhone has?
That is true.
And the iPad, and it's still chunky.
Now,
so okay. I'd be interested to see how Adobe responds.
In Adobe's defense, and I know there's like 10 people out there whose heads just snapped around going, what? But in Adobe's defense, keep in mind this is a beta version of Flash.
Right.
Now, that said, showing a beta version of Flash that can't really just astound everyone, in my opinion, is a really bad business move, because there are so many people out there that think Flash is a dog, Flash is going to crash your device, it's going to suck down your battery, it's going to make your processor melt and fall through the case. Okay, so knowing that, why in the world would you show a beta that essentially does just that? I think they would have been better off saying, yeah, I know, people keep bagging on us because we've been promising and haven't been able to deliver a good mobile Flash for a couple of years, but just wait. When we think it's ready, we'll show it to you. And everyone would give them a hard time saying, they can't produce a version that works, and we don't see anything that fails. When they get it right, they show it, and we go, damn, they really could do it. But now we have this where everyone goes, see, this is exactly the problem. You're writing crap. And that's a lot harder to overcome than delaying and showing something that's good.
I agree. Okay, so we have our iPhone picks to get to, and possibly some other stories if you guys have anything else you want to talk about. But before we do that, we have to talk about our wonderful sponsor, and that is Citrix with GoToAssist Express. You can try it free for 30 days by going to GoToAssist.com/Ally, but I will tell you what it does. One of the most irritating things that happens when I'm helping out family members with their computers is when they call and ask me what seems like, or maybe what they say, is going to be a simple thing and ends up being, you know, one of those 2-hour calls, and your neck hurts because you're holding the phone there and it's, you know, it's sweaty because it's against your face, and you're frustrated because you're telling them to click here, and then, okay, what do you see? All right, click over here. And you can't see what they're doing, and you have to make them become your hands and eyes. And, you know, ideally you want a solution where you can see the screen and control it. Well, you can do that maybe with iChat, but, you know, sometimes people don't have AIM accounts or Google Talk accounts or something set up, and it's just, you know, maybe not going to work for them. And it's just not as simple as doing what you can do with GoToAssist Express. So the way it works is you sign up for the account, download the application into your computer, and once you've done that, It's incredibly simple. All you have to do when you get that phone call from your family member or a friend or whoever, you open the application. It tells you right away, here's the URL they need to go to. It's always the same URL. And then they'll give you a special PIN for that specific session that's all ready to go for you. You just give them the URL, give them the PIN number, and within, I'd say, 30 seconds to a minute, the special software downloads on their end. They don't have to set anything up at all. They just hit yes. And then you can see their screen. You can control it. You can chat with them. You can send files back and forth. I believe that the file transfer portion only works on Windows, but everything else works on both Macs and PCs. And you can, you know, have one person on a PC and one person on a Mac. It doesn't matter. You can pull up a full system profile so you can see everything that's installed in the computer as far as hardware goes. You can see all the software that's installed. You can see everything that's running so you can see if there's virus software that might be screwing something up or maybe a process that keeps hanging up. Whatever you need to see, you can check that out and take control of the computer, do whatever you need to, get the problem solved for you, for them, and it's just... It's so much better than having to worry about doing stuff over the phone or traveling out to them. So it's great for people who are their family's unofficial IT man, and also for real people in IT. I believe a lot of companies actually use GoToAssist Express for doing support. You can actually do up to 8 sessions at once. So if you're updating someone's software on one screen, you can pop over to another one and help someone out there and jump back and forth between those. It's 128-bit SSL encrypted, so it's secure. You don't have to worry about people seeing your private information. I know my dad's incredibly concerned about that kind of stuff, and you know he's willing to check it out because it is very secure. And yeah, it's great. You can try it free for 30 days at gotoassist.com/Allie. You get the free 30-day trial by using that special URL, and you actually indicate to them that you listen to the We Have Communicators podcast. So check it out, gotoassist.com/Allie. And with that...
Tell your dad not to use photocopiers.
Oh.
Did you guys see that ABC report or something? Somebody sent me a link.
No, what was that?
Well, since 2002... Just about every photocopier ever sold into an office, they all have hard drives. So when you scan something on the glass or you actually photocopy something or send it from your computer, it caches all that stuff. It stores those documents in the hard drive so that if, you know, you came back, you could call up the log and you could reprint stuff and things like that.
Yeah, well, thankfully for my father, all of his copiers are from the late 70s.
Well, no. But so CBS or ABC, one of the news agencies went out, and there's warehouses now. So when companies finish with their copiers, they sell them to these warehouses, and then these warehouses resell them in many cases, like overseas and stuff like that. And they bought just 4 random ones from a place in New York, pulled the hard drives. 2 were from... had data from New Jersey police force, the sex crimes division, including of like the records for people they were investigating and stuff like that. Another one was an insurance company and had everybody's 300 pages of medical records for people, including social security numbers and all kinds of other data. So just to make everybody afraid, you know, and so if your insurance company's photocopying your documents, they could end up, you know, who knows where?
Yeah, very interesting.
That, that kind of makes me want to randomly go into offices and photocopy my butt.
Exactly.
You should just do that without the intent of that.
We can use these security holes to our advantage
by spreading blurry photos of Jeff's butt.
I can only imagine there's like 3 people out in the world that are going, ooh.
But thankfully, and all 3 of those
shopping for copiers now.
Sorry for the rat hole picks.
Well, I wanted to mention one thing before we got to the picks. We talked about last week that what was it, Foxconn, or no, it was DigiTimes talking about the new display panels in the next generation iPhone being 33% thinner, and that we would probably see increased battery capacity for that. And one of the thoughts I had is that we may see 802.11n in the next iPhone. We already see it in the iPad, and you know, doesn't really seem to degrade the battery life of that too drastically. I mean, we get fantastic battery life on our iPads with the wonderful A4 processor, so why not have 802.11n in the next iPhone?
Actually, that seems totally reasonable to me. As long as Apple is satisfied with the battery performance they get, then throwing 802.11n into the iPhone makes sense.
Yeah. And also, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, the iPad, the USB on the iPad is way, way faster than the iPhone. Have you guys noticed that? It just transfers stuff so much quicker.
I never hook mine to my computer. And well, we covered this last episode.
You know, I don't know if it's so much that the USB is that much faster.
Or if it's the CPU.
Yeah, because you hit a bottleneck at some point. It's either how fast can the USB port accept data, or how fast can the computer process the data that it's accepting.
Right, because the USB relies on the processor to transfer.
Right, so I have a feeling that the faster performance we're seeing is more an artifact of the processor itself as opposed to the USB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason I bring up the 802.11n thing specifically is because I've been trying the Wi-Fi sync, and unfortunately, it's completely messed up my iPhone because it thought it was syncing, and then the phone went to sleep, and then it stopped syncing, and then it just got really, really confused. So beware of that. For those who are, you can go onto Cydia and buy it for $10, but man, be careful, because my phone is screwed up. I have a few hours of work to do after this, but over the you wonder why Apple rejected it. The iPad version, though, or doing it on the iPad, I should say, was much nicer and very fast because it's over 802.11n as opposed to on the iPhone. So it transferred music pretty quickly. I would say just about as fast as it would happen on USB. But again, be careful with that, because if you drop off of Wi-Fi, there's no telling what'll happen. Or, I mean, there are other problems, too. If you're syncing with two computers, who knows?
Now, okay, so back to the USB thing real quick. Have either of you tried transferring photos from your iPhone to your iPad through the camera connection kit?
No.
I don't have one. Didn't we go over this, too?
Haven't you gotten that yet?
Right.
You're just rubbing salt in the wound, aren't you, Jeff? You want to send me yours?
I should go get myself
sure.
one.
Sure, I'll have Michael send his over right away.
I'm going to go get one and call you and tell you that it's awesome.
So, all right. So, Adam, I will be watching at my local Apple stores. And if I go in and they have one, I will just buy it and then send it on to you.
That would be so sweet of you, Jeff.
I will pay you.
Well, the important thing is we get you your camera connection kit. So, but where was I going? Oh, that's right. I have been playing with transferring photos from my iPhone to my iPad with the camera connection kit, and that is so damn slick. It's fast, and the interface is really nice. It works really well. So I see me using that a lot at conferences and expos.
Transferring photos from your iPhone to your iPad?
Yeah. So what I'm picturing is I'm out and about, I'm on the expo floor, and I want to get some quick photos. And so I use my iPhone, snap the photos, go back to the media lounge, and want to work on some articles, short things, on my iPad, and I want to include photos. So I just move them from my iPhone over to my iPad, and then I have everything in one place.
Yeah, but Jeff, how do you get photos from your iPad to a web interface? Because at least on the back end at iPhone Alley, it's a situation where you click choose file, and then you're presented with the operating system's file chooser, and you choose which file you want to upload. So how does that work on the iPad?
I'm working on that part right now.
Okay, so you still can't do that, but you're going to figure that out, and then
yes,
okay,
and yeah, it's all pieces of a magic little puzzle. And when it comes together, I'm going to be so excited.
Yeah, cool. All right, on to iPhone picks. Adam, would you like to go first?
Oh, sure. Now, I'm going to pick an app. I don't think it's perfect, but it's kind of the best app I've found for this so far. Actually, I'm getting ready in a couple weeks. We're going to be going camping. And do you guys know about Big Nerd Ranch? I guess I should start there.
Oh, Big Nerd Ranch.
I've heard.
Are you really going there?
No, I'm going camping. Oh. I'm not going to Big Nerd Ranch.
I thought maybe you're taking your tent.
This app is one of the apps that is on the App Store that's available from Big Nerd Ranch. They have a few iPhone apps, and this one's free, and it's called Campware. And it, essentially, it's a list of all of the state, local, national campgrounds in at least the U.S. I haven't tried it outside the U.S., but at least in the U.S. And it uses location, and so you can call it up. It's got a map, and you can find all of the campgrounds that are near you and then drill into those and get information about the location, the phone number, the website, the phone number if you want to reserve a campsite, directions to the campsite, the current weather in that location. And it also has a way to submit suggestions to correct their data. And you can mark campsites as favorite campsites. And let's see, what else does it do? Search for campsites, all that kind of stuff. So you can get campsite information from wherever you are. And it's free.
That is really cool.
Yeah. Now, the couple features I'm hoping they'll add at some point is it would be great if people could submit photos, or you could get photos of the campsites. And the only other feature I think I wish it had is maybe like almost like a Yelp kind of thing, just
user
submitted reviews or ratings of the sites.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You said it was free?
It's free.
It says $3.99 on the iTunes.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe they just
updated the price or something.
I think it's cool that it uses, if you have the Navigon app,
it uses
that to direct you in to your campground. That's really slick.
I'm guessing
I must have paid for it. It's well worth $4. So
cool. But I'm guessing the Navigon feature works not by using the technology within the app. It probably just provides that specially formatted Navigon link. So when you say, okay, I want to navigate there, it pops you into Navigon.
Very likely.
Yep. Okay. Sorry. It is called Campware.
Campware.
Yep. Yeah. Campware. And it is $4. Jeff, what do you have for us this week?
Okay. My app this week is an iPad app called Solar Walk. And it's a very cool application that gives you like a real-time simulation of our solar system with all the planets except Pluto. And just so you know, I still consider Pluto a planet, all right? So it should be there. But anyhow, so it gives you all the planets of the solar system and shows you what they look like in real time, so you can see what part of the planet would be illuminated by the sun and what part isn't. And it gives you detailed information about each of the planets and even gives you a cutaway so you can see down to the core. And it's just this really cool application with really great renderings of the planets and our moon. And what I'm hoping is that over time they'll start adding in more things like other major celestial objects for our solar system, you know, like maybe big comets that we know about, like Halley's Comet, and adding in more moons for the gas giants and things like that. But that said, it's a very cool application with lots of really good information, and the way it flies into the planets when you pick the one that you want to look at is really cool. And it even has some kind of neat celestial-ish whatever background music that it plays, but you can shut that off if you want. But it's really cool. You can move backwards and forth through time so you can see what the lighting should look like on a planet at any specific time and where the planets sit in relation to each other. Very cool, very fun little app.
Awesome. It's called Solar Walk.
Solar Walk. And I have no idea how much I paid for it.
It's $2.99. And it's a universal app, so it'll work on both the iPhone and the iPad.
Oh, no way. I'm going to install it on my iPhone then.
Yep. Awesome. Solar Walk. Okay, so my pick is called iSequence, and I believe they've had an app out for the iPhone for some time before they brought out the iPad app. But I've been looking for a music creation application for the iPad for a while, and one that doesn't suck, I should say. And this one is just it blows everything else away. What iSequence is, it's a music sequencing application. And so for those who aren't familiar with sequencing applications, what it allows you to do is take little bits of, you know, audio, be it, you know, a drum kit, like here, let me, you know, stuff like that. Lay it out in sequence on whichever beats, and you can layer these up as much as you want to make really cool, you know, pieces of music. And let me play something that was created with the application, and holding it up to the mic here. I don't think it's going to play.
Of course not, because you're trying to demo it.
Right. But anyway, it comes with, it looks like, three different kits. So you have internal, Synthology, and Legacy. So you get a whole bunch of different... Okay, see, the audio is completely gone now. Good job, iPad. Yeah, so anyway, it allows you to... You can play it back, and as you're playing it back, you can add in these different layers, and I'm going to try and bring up an example of the music again. Electro House. And... Nothing. Okay, well, just trust me. This thing is awesome. You can... It comes with tons and tons of different kits. It comes with three banks of music with, you know, some of these kits give you a full piano key, a full set of piano keys that you can play different notes on. Some of them are drum kits. So you have sample pads that you can tap on and set that up. There are different groups that you can do, so you can have it play through the various groups. Repeat. There's copy paste, so you can easily copy loops and paste them into different spots and easily make stuff just on the fly as you're letting it play. So you can layer things up as it goes, and it's really, really cool. And I wish I could make some audio come out of it, but it for some reason is not doing that for me. But it's very cool and totally worth the $6.99 it is, iSequence, and trust me, this is one thing that's actually good for music creation on the iPad, and it's not going to play. Oh well. But check it out, iSequence, and you can check out their website if you find it in the App Store. Have you guys done any, have you checked out sequencing applications? Are you familiar with any of those kinds of apps?
I've never played with one on the iPad, but yeah, maybe I'll have to.
I'm just a magic piano kind of guy.
Magic piano?
Yeah. You haven't tried magic piano, Smule? Magic piano?
Oh, that stupid thing? I hate that.
Of course, because it's not really a music creation app. But guess what? I can use it and I can play like really cool music, piano music. Because all I have to do is touch the little light dots and it plays it for me.
Yep. So
it's like Tap Tap Revenge or something.
Yeah, yeah. But you can create real music with this. It has 8 tracks, an effects curve editor.
Wait.
I'm talking about iSequence.
See, you have to be a musician first.
For right? This? No, not at all.
No.
This is you have a bunch of loops. You have those drum kits.
Yeah, but you still have to understand. That's like saying I can create music because I have GarageBand and I've got all those cool loops and things like that. Which yes, technically I can. But can I create anything anybody wants to listen to?
Yeah, I think so.
No, I can't.
I think you could.
Someone with talent does. See, the talent element is missing, Michael.
Okay.
Your mom would like it.
Exactly.
Yes.
I would be, you know the first few episodes of American Idol?
No, but go ahead.
Where they have the people that say they can sing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be like what I would create with something like this.
So you would do an instrumental for Shebang.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but definitely, I love these kinds of apps we're playing around with. I've played around with apps like this, and it's fun, but would I share anything with anybody? I don't, probably not.
Okay, I'm gonna make some audio from this app come out of my speakers. Can you guys hear that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that Adam's mom would love it.
Oh, FYI, I'm noticing here too. It's only $6.99 until May 30th.
Okay, yeah, I think that is a sale price, and I think it'll go up to $10 probably.
$14.99.
It's well worth it.
The point is, get it now.
Yeah, get it now. So if you know what a sequencing app is, a sequencer, then this is it. It's awesome. And right now, you can't load in your own loops right now. But that's coming in the next version. So get it while it's cheap. iSequence for iPad. And with that, you can try Go to Assist Express for 30 days. Go to assist.com/Allie. They're our sponsor. Check them out. Help support the podcast. You can find our picks as well as the show notes at I have iPhone Allie written down here, but it's wehavecommunicators.com. You can get all the show notes and all that stuff there. You can send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the wonderful Mac Observer, macobserver.com and twitter.com/jgamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Well, as always, it's a blast to be here.
Yeah, it's great.
And if you can figure out exactly what it was that I drew today.
Oh, what did you draw? Should I look at it now while we're talking?
Sure. I'm not exactly sure what it is.
It looks like it might be like something from Ren and Stimpy.
I don't know.
Yeah. The subject is, I have no idea what this is.
So maybe people can call in and
well, then it's in an Anatco.
Yeah.
It's an Anatco. Okay.
Because I have no idea.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah. So the I guess what the action item is to call in and let us know what you think
and
this is.
Let us know what the hell.
So if you can come up with something humorous, we might actually play it. So you can send in your audio comments to an audio file feedback@wehavecommunicators.com, but you can also call us 202-642-6667. And if you don't have anything to say right now, just put it in your phone. Put it in the directory under We Have Communicators or those iPhone dudes or however you want to put it in there. Just keep it in there for whenever something strikes you and you need to call in and let us know when you have something cool to say. 202-642-6667.
Hey, and while we're asking for people, what? Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
I can't wait to hear how Google Voice transcribes the message I left at the beginning of the show.
Yeah. And you can find Adam Christensen at the MacCast at MacCast.com.
Yes, that's where you can find me. But I wanted to get one more plea in, or at least ask you if there is a plan for and we might have mentioned this last time, We Have Communicators logo or album art.
It's coming. I'm just...
Are you actually working on something already?
I haven't started working on anything.
Can we crowdsource it? Yeah,
let's do that. I there's no guarantee that I'll use it.
No. But
if you come up with something awesome.
Some submissions, there's got to be some designers and cool graphics people out there. If you have an idea.
Yeah. Okay, so if you want to submit something for our album art... for this show, the new We Have Communicators, you can incorporate some Star Trek if you want, but I would prefer no. I would prefer no. Just kind of focus on the iPhone, iPad, apps, etc. kind of thing. You can send that to feedback at wehavecommunicators.com. And there's no end right now to when that when we're going to stop taking submissions. Basically, the end
all
is
the way
gonna,
up until you find the one you like,
or I
exactly
get my
or
stuff
we
together.
Develop
and
our
just,
own. Yeah. Yeah, no guarantee we'll use it, and there's no compensation other than if I guess we would, you know, give you credit, but
yeah, we'll say that we'll say that you did it, and maybe we'll pimp your Twitter.
Well, famous at least, maybe
pimp your Twitter. Yeah, you'll get famous from on the Twitter. So yeah, so mattcast.com, and if you want to become a what are we calling this? A premium Mattcast
member. A member of the we have a membership program, Mattcast members. You can find it at member.mattcast.com, and you get like 12 extra episodes a month. I mean, it's like a killer deal.
That is a killer deal. That's a
and
fantastic.
How much does
deal.
It cost?
It costs well. There's different price levels. There's a year membership, and there's a 6 month membership, and then there's month to month. But it averages out to around $4 a month.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, you know, people not only should they subscribe, they should subscribe twice.
Yes,
because that's
it depends
more
on what plan you get. If you do the month to month, it's $5 a month. But if you go the full year, it's like just a little more than $4. $45 for the year.
Yep.
Just everyone go sign up right now. Just do it.
Member.mattcast.com. And you can also find Adam on Twitter, twitter.com/mattcast. Thank you so much for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks. It was fun.
Yep. And you can find me on Twitter if you want to, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, but I don't talk about the iPhone.
You definitely do not.
And just, you know, putting it out there so you're not confused.
That's not true, actually. You talked about the iPhone maybe yesterday. You offered a pro tip about putting the toilet seat down.
That is true. Toilets eat iPhones, so put the seat down if you're going to be in the bathroom with your iPhone.
And we just lost 7 listeners.
No, that's a good tip. Put your seat down. Toilets eat iPhones. And with that, another We Have Communicators is in the can. And that was a toilet pun.
Can you explain one thing to me, Jeff, about the holodeck that I always wondered?
Okay.
So people go on the holodeck and they like walk around, right?
Right.
But it's a finite space.
Yeah.
I get that. And it's so if you're walking forward, does the floor like move?
That's always been my
like
understanding.
A big conveyor belt or something like that?
Like an omnidirectional conveyor belt that works for everybody no matter where they're walking?
You know, they actually addressed that. And so here's the deal.
Oh boy.
The holodeck uses transporter and force field technology.
Oh yeah, I remember hearing that.
So you can have that finite space, and then by manipulating your movements with force fields, you can use that small space to make it appear as if it's much larger, and as long as you don't move too fast, you can have it appear as if it's an infinite space, because it can continue building out with force fields and beaming things to fill in that space, so it appears as if you have a much larger area.
So it beams you just kind of back to the center or something, keeps beaming.
Well, they never explained that specifically.
Yeah, where's the manual?
That's what I'm wondering about.
But the way they talked about it, it sounds like you're actually getting beamed, and But in the very
so here's the bigger question: is it don't when it, things materialize when they're being beamed? Don't they have that kind of effect that like where you know they kind of like draw it in? It's like a JPEG from going from low
also,
pixels.
Right.
How come that doesn't happen on the holodeck then? And if they don't need that anymore, why didn't they upgrade the freaking transporter room software so you just appear?
Yeah. Tell us that, Jeff. You're from the future. And an internet.